We're jumping in there. I'm having way too much fun already, man. It's Fairfield County Live and Local, presented by the Sono Collection. My name is John Kamal from 95.9 The Fox. Everybody, please welcome back Terrapin. Welcome back, guys. It's good to have you.
Good to see you, John.
It's good to have you, man. You know, it's been what is it? It's October, so it's been 10 months since the last time we all spoke. Oh, wow. And so many things, I know, right? Like, so many things have happened. You guys were gearing up for a big live stream that you did at the Bijou that went over beautifully. And I guess I want to start tonight by just asking you guys, like, what has being back at shows been like for you?
I mean, look, there's nothing like playing live, right? I mean, that's just the
right.
There's just no way to replicate it. And as much as it was really great to play and do some incredible work for great organizations, of which one we'll talk about tonight,
yes,
over the spring, the getting back in front of a real audience with, you know, with appreciation for the stuff that we've done, and honestly, to debut some of the material that we've been working on was incredibly rewarding, and you know, all culminating honestly with this Halloween, you know, this Halloween weekend. So really great. Obviously, it's still a little bit dicey out there. With, you know, you don't, every place is slightly different, but you know, we're ready to go, and so playing live has been phenomenal.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to jump in. The tour started down in Annapolis, Maryland. And I'll tell you, some people told us, hey, last show we saw, you guys. First show we saw after COVID, you guys.
Wow.
They were out of their mind. They were doing the conga. I've never seen this at a Jets show. Around the audience, like, dun, 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 dun. And the servers are coming through with the beers. It was just absolute bedlam, and we loved it.
Well, I'm, you know, I mean, Paul, I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask, what was the first gig that felt relatively normal for you guys? And like, how did that feel?
That was the one.
That was it.
And they, previous to that, they had plexiglass up around the stage. So
really,
I was sweating bullets going down, going, I don't know how we're going to do this with plexiglass around the stage. We got there and it was gone. And I was so excited. And a new thing developed where they were like, trying to tip the artist by throwing money over the plexiglass, right? And so they just didn't bother to throw it over the plexiglass. They just threw it on stage. And I've never seen this before either.
That's not a new trick, man. That's from chicken houses in the 50s.
I was going to say, that's an old, but so old it's new trick.
Yeah, that's a rediscovered trick.
I wasn't alive then, you know.
One guy.
That's like the same. That's like the scene in Blues Brothers behind the chicken wire, and they all start throwing the beer bottles.
Yeah. It's one of the best scenes of all time, bro.
Oh, yes.
Rawhide.
That's right. That's right. Uh-huh. That's the sign. And then they do Stand By Your Man afterwards.
That's right.
I still know how to do that dance.
Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's such an incredible feeling. Like, you know, I mean, I've been lucky enough to play out live a couple of times since then. I mean, not nearly as frequent or with the kind of crowds that you guys are having, but it's different. It's different to have. Yeah. There's a third type of show. There's a third type of playing that we discovered in COVID. There's always been, you know, practice by yourself with the band, and then there's been playing out. But then we created this weird in between of like, we're out, but we're live streamed, and we are live, and it is playing live, but it's not at the same time.
Right. I mean, it's funny because this is top of mind. Like a week ago, I was going through some of our own archive material, and we have the Bijou show that we did back in January. And, you know, we did two sets. If you remember, we had, it was really on two nights in a row, but we filmed it all on the same day. And the uncut version of what we had, I was watching before the second set, and even just the dynamics between the band, we were laughing about it because it was like, you know, something you just wouldn't see live. And then when we got into it, the music kind of took a while to get going. It was great, but the energy wasn't there. It was just, it was like we had to create it on our own magic and our own stage. And we did it because we were having fun that night, but it was definitely a different scene.
That's exactly right. The energy of a live show does show up. That was my experience playing live, was that you do eventually get there, but it takes so much longer, and you've got to dig deep with the rest of the guys on stage to get to that same place.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk about, you guys referenced it already, but new music, which I've played on the local show Sunday nights at 9 p.m. which we're going to play again. Yeah, of course, man, which we're going to play again this Sunday. But, you know, you guys, Terrapin, and for people who are, you know, maybe watching this who don't know, you guys are known for playing the Dead and for doing it fantastically. The Dead, you know, the Dead plus, you know, I mean, I've played your version of Gold Dust Woman before. You've got a huge repertoire, but you're known for cover material. You're known for other material. That being said, we've got this new song, Light of the Moon, that we've played a few times, and there's a lot more coming. I've got so many questions about this. And I guess my first and biggest one is, what is it like to transition? What's that conversation with the band where you transition from a focus on other people's material to suddenly writing your own?
Why don't you take this, guys? I'll weigh in on the songs, but you talk about the thesis.
Okay.
I'll jump in for like the discovery. I guess, you know, we came about it about, I don't know, 2-3 years ago. Paul, Jeff, and I were having dinner and probably way too much wine, figuring out how to take this thing forward after a blip. And we'd all been writing independently, and we're like, well, why don't we just do originals? Then we kept drinking and we tabled it for a while. And then the pandemic hit, and Jeff, everybody's like stuck in their own space. Yeah. And all of a sudden Jeff starts throwing guitar licks over via phone saying, I need lyrics. And I'd sit there and crank out a lyric and be like, here you go. What do you think of this? Cool. I need a bridge. Okay. What do you think of this? And then Paul would be like, well, I got a riff for that song over here. And then, you know, as we're all sitting in basements, probably not unlike anybody else that's doing the same thing.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden you got 12, 13 songs written and you're like, okay, now what do we do? Band gets back together. Hey guys, we started writing all this original music. What do you think? And they're like, at that point, everybody's going for it. You know, like what do you have to lose? You've been stuck in a basement. You've experienced like the vacuum, right? So you're just looking to get back out and do it. And look, I mean, it's there's a high suck probability when you write your own songs, you know.
Sure.
you kiss a lot of pigs or frogs or whatever you want to call it, and that's okay, you know, but you got to do that a little bit to get a little better. And so we kept doing it, and Light of the Moon's probably the first one we were kind of ready to say, okay, let's test it up. Throw it out there. And we started putting them in the set list and not telling anybody what we were doing until after the song was played. And, and we just kept kind of doing that. And, you know, the more we road tested it, we're like, this could actually work. So we threw another one in, and we threw another one in, and here we are.
Yeah, and John, I would just add, I mean, the whole, you know, Fairfield County right now, as you know, is become, I mean, just this center hotbed for whatever you want to call this movement, jam band or, you know.
Yep. Articles have been written.
Not even a question. I mean, I don't know whether or not someone said this, but it's clear to me this has a Seattle feel from the 90s, right? And there's a real.
I love that comparison. I love that comparison.
It is. It's very cool. And, you know, Aggie and Goose and these guys they're writing unbelievably cool material. And, you know, we felt like a couple things were apparent. One is we had the talent, and to JP and Paul's points, that was, we just needed to kind of bring it together. And two, it's not that we were tired of doing what we're doing. We're not. We love playing this music, probably more so now than we ever did. But if you really want to break out of the noise, and there's a lot of noise in the Grateful Dead world, and I mean that sincerely, not in a negative way. There's just a lot of people doing this music because it's fabulous music, right? So we just felt like we could bring something to it that would blend very, very well. We have no intentions of giving up, you know, great Grateful Dead music over wherever this takes us. But we've always wanted to add in, you know, this whole new twist to it, which is, what can we bring to the table, learning from those experiences over the last 40 years of my personal musical life, and I'm sure similar to these guys, what can we bring to it that's new and exciting and honestly takes it to the next level? And so the originals were just obviously the answer to that. So.
And I love the fact, and I just wanted to say, just JP saying that you guys snuck them into the audience, because I was going to ask that. Did you announce beforehand, or did you sneak them in? Sneaking them in is always the way to go. But I'm sorry, Paul, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, it's not too dissimilar to the path that the Grateful Dead actually took, right? Yeah. If you think about
a lot of bands, yeah.
It's the 50th anniversary of Skull and Roses, right? If you listen to that live album, they've got me and Bobby McGee and Johnny B. Goode on there, right? They were mixing it up a little bit with the covers to kind of get their stuff to flow. So we're just taking that same kind of a path.
Weren't they known as the world's greatest cover band at one point?
They were.
That, I mean, it is. It's a path that a lot of bands have taken. I mean, you know, the Disco Biscuits were known for doing a lot of Phish covers in the 90s. And then you've got, I mean, Van Halen started out as just the ultimate bar cover band, but years before they even started doing any kind of, you know, any kind of original material themselves. It's a very natural progression,
Well, I think the other thing is like, look, the Dead are important to us on every level imaginable. I think the most important thing is the ability for us as musicians and people to listen to each other while we're playing. That is the most important thing. Right. If you can't do that, then the jam band's meaningless, right? So the originals are a way we can express that in a new way, right? So we all have our own influences, right? I love The Who, and I mean Genesis is like one of my favorite bands of all time. So how do I work those influences into what we're doing in a way that still fits our motif? That's the magic.
Well, and so you mentioned in a way that still fits your motif, because I did want to ask, was there any kind of pressure from yourself or from other or from the rest of the band to make the songs kind of Dead-y? If that makes sense, or to have them sound a certain way. Was there a this doesn't sound like Terrapin moment? You know what I mean?
Never that. I don't think in that sense. But you guys, for me, it's always like I'm never happy. Like I always think it sucks. Like I don't want it to sound like, so I'm like, oh my God, does this sound like crap versus does it sound like the Dead? But you know, they work themselves out, and everybody has sort of an input to it. And why does it sound like it does? Probably because we've been playing with each other for now 8 years, and it's going to end up sounding like that no matter what we do. But we never had any direct conversations that way.
And I think at the end of the day, what I'm always looking for is, would I go see this?
Yeah, fair right? point.
If it right. doesn't float in that, then I don't want to, I wouldn't want to pursue it, or I'd want to change it to make it fit that.
Great point.
Yeah, that's the ultimate litmus test for really any creative thing. It's like, is this, you know, the goal is to make the thing that you want to go see that no one's made yet, right?
Yep. I think the other thing that I learned from the Dead, I don't know if it was just because this is the way they wanted to do it or they were just lazy, who knows? But at the end of the day, you know, there were many tunes that, you know, in the Dark album, which came out, what, in 1987, I guess, 90%, if not all of those tunes, had been road tested for 5 years, right? So 82 is when Touch of Grey came out, and Hell in a Bucket first came out, and Brother Esau came out in 83. And so all the stuff that ended up on that album had serious road time, right? And it was a way for them, and that's why that album was really, honestly, it was V2 of the Grateful Dead. Maybe some would argue V4, but it was where the Dead actually became pop and mainstream, right? Yeah. And I, in my opinion, that by the time they got into the studio, those songs were baked. They knew what they wanted to do. And so Light of the Moon's like now had at least four or five live iterations. Yeah. Some of the new stuff, Northbound Train, you'll hear. And there's some really cool stuff coming up that is going to get out there. Hopefully on the 30th, we're going to get two or three out as well. And, you know, that will start getting its road testing. And then ultimately, by the time we hit the studio, you know, I'm convinced these things will sound different than they will day one, but ultimately in a much better position.
it's a luxury that really, and I hate the term jam band, but it does fit here. Is, you know, it's a luxury that jam bands are kind of have exclusively, of being able to road test material like that over a long period of time. I think there were some, you know, I like Pearl Jam used to do that too. Yeah. They would have songs that they would have on the road for years and stuff like that. But it is first of all, it's a great way to save money on studio time. Oh boy. Because when you write in the studio, that'll just add up very fast. I've made that mistake with every band that I've been in, every single one of them. All right. Yeah, man. I mean, you know, you guys talked about briefly this sort of renaissance that's happening in Fairfield County and really Connecticut on the whole. As people who have been here for, you know, who've been on this scene for so long and have been able to watch it, you know, at least as long as I have, if not longer, what are you excited about? What are you most excited about? Because there's a lot going on right now.
Yeah, I mean,
whether it's a band, a new venue, whatever, what's the thing that's like exciting you the most about the music scene in Fairfield County and Greater Connecticut?
The whole system has now been developed, right, in order to not only attract talent, but it has created a reason to come to Connecticut, right? Yeah. So now bands want to come here, and they know that, one, the audience is super educated, right? This is they are really into this music.
That's well said.
You've got to create, like, it's almost like it's a litmus test you got to pass, right? I mean, Tedeschi Trucks, I think they were here, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 times over the COVID era. You had, J-Rad has been here God knows how many times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the residency at Westville, that was every other weekend. It was like, oh, yeah, we're going to J-Rad again. Okay.
Yet, you know, I know they were excited about that because the audiences showed up. And more importantly, they're going to listen. And I think what's been happening in the last, you know, I this is a gross over-exaggeration, but the concerts I've attended over the last 10 years, there's been such they become almost social events, right? And, you know, sometimes it's really annoying. People are on their phone or doing this, doing that, and music becomes secondary. Connecticut's not like that. You come to these events, people are into the music, they're educated, they want to hear good stuff, they're willing and accepting of new material. They and this now is a destination, and that's great. It's no longer just a stopover between New York and Boston. It's like a place people have to play. I love it.
It's a gatekeeping mentality. And I love that you say that the audience is educated, because it is rare to be able to. I talk about music and bands and what's going on with music and bands, you know, whether they're on a local level, on a national level, or even on a super famous level. I talk about it like I talk about sports now. You know, like gauging like how this show went versus this show, you know, like recapping. It's like recapping a game, or talking about like when Timmy went to go play with Lotus. Like that was like the ultimate trade to end all trades. You know what I mean? Like you find yourself really getting into the weeds of the, and I love that. I love that. Some people would want to say like, oh, just let the music be the music. Oh man, I want to nerd out about it. I want to nerd out about everything.
Yeah. That Tim move was like the Babe Ruth, you know, that was great. You know?
And I think the point is we can nerd out about it because there is quantity and that kind of quality.
The combination of the two, which you don't have in this small of an environment. You know, I mean, I think, you know, Jeff, you said you compared it to Seattle 1989 to 1991, and I think that's great. And of course New York City has so much going on in a small and closed space, but that's New York, dude. Like you expect it out of that.
Yeah,
you don't realize, you know, you don't realize when you come up here and there's like four different scenes all within 20 miles of each other, just in Southern Connecticut alone.
Correct. Yeah.
And I think what we'll see over time is probably something like you'd see in New York or Boston, where you have that kind of artist development idea of like venues will start to scale bands up as they go. Right. Like it used to be, you'd have the acoustic in Bridgeport. You'd have, I don't even know what in Westchester, something in New Haven, you know, and now you've got
Garcia is probably right in Westchester.
But that didn't happen until 2013 or something like that. Like I remember I was booking a band I was in at the time. We did a lot of Dead They're still kicking around. And I used to call places to get gigs, and they're like, no, we don't book dead bands. They don't draw, you know. And that's calling restaurants to have them move tables and move PAs in and like do all that junk lugging stuff. And yeah, now it's like you can trip over a dead band, and everybody's booking them. There's millions of places to play. The venues have opened up. It's really just a really nice time to be in this position, you know. But to your point, like Black Rock opening up, you know, the new venues that once were the Acoustic. You've got the Bryak over there. It's like
Park
you've got
City,
bands
yeah.
that can go from like Bryak to opening spots at another venue to headlining spots at another venue to, okay, now we're playing at the Hartford, you know, like opening right. at the Hartford to playing the Hartford. Like, that's a cool idea. That's nice.
Hey, you know what? That's fun. That's funny too, because there really is that natural progression now, right? Like you're gonna play at Bryak for like a year or two, and then Park City's got 300 to 400 that you can advance yourself to, and then you've got the Klein. You guys are gonna be at the Klein right down the street. We're talking about a mile.
Yeah,
exactly. Is that a mile of real estate where you can do all those things and forget about the warehouse and FTC?
Exactly.
And then you got Ridgefield, you got Wall Street, you go up to New Haven and then into Hartford. It really just is a progression of, you know, Jimmy Koplik, who's the famous, you know, the promoter who's been around for forever.
Let's talk about this.
He's created, you know, just legendary places on his own. And now with these Bridgeport festivals that he wants to bring in and stuff, this is just building. This is momentum. You can feel it. You know, Eggy and Goose have done such amazingly cool stuff, but they're just the tip of the iceberg, right? And we just want to be, you know, considered part of that, even though we're not all that young. We think we have a lot to give.
So. I agree. It's good that you brought up the Goose, because I remember I went and I saw their Westville the June run that they did at Westville.
Yeah.
And it was my first major concert back after COVID. It was my first time hanging out in the lot. Like, honestly, hanging out in the lot was the most fun thing. But I'm walking around and I'm talking to all of these people that I haven't seen for the longest time, people that are in the scene, whether as musicians or as highly educated fans. And we're having these conversations and we're all talking about like, yeah, dude, I remember seeing Goose in like 2016 at Bryak with like 30 people. And I knew every single person in the place. And now here we are. And now here we are at this, you know, venue that holds thousands, even at half capacity, like it was in June, thousands of people. It's a great physical representation of the evolution that that the whole scene has had.
It's very cool. To some degree, we're not at that level, but we've had that experience, you know, playing.
Yeah, pretty close.
We're getting there, but we're trying, I should say. The originals, back to the original question, the originals are going to help that. You know what I mean? That's the whole point.
Well, so let's talk about this show with the Klein, dude, because there's a lot to talk about, and it's going to be a lot of fun. For people who don't know, by the way, if you're just tuning into this, it's a Terrapin Live October 30th Mischief Night show at the Klein in Bridgeport. And who wants to start? Tell me about this thing, because you must have so many plans.
You guys. Go ahead.
Okay. Nobody. I'll jump in. I think we try to, like, you look for that big show at the end of the year, and we weren't sure. This got booked during like the prime of COVID. So we weren't sure who was booking what. And, you know, our manager put feelers out to everywhere in Maria. The Klein called back and said, okay, let's do it. So we're like, all right, great. And then COVID opened up and then it closed down again. And we've been zigzagging through this whole thing, but, you know, ultimately it's kind of our last show of the year. We spent, you know, the last couple of months touring about five states here and there, introducing the originals, kind of putting things out where we could and cutting things up. And this is kind of the, as I said, when we kicked off the tour, it's kind of like, you're going to go through this evolution with the band and kind of see where it's going. And just like COVID, we're zigging and zagging through everything and trying stuff out. And I think, you know, what Jeff said earlier about, you know, tossing a couple of other songs into the ring, I think you're going to see more of that. So if this is a show where you're kind of into seeing more of new stuff and seeing kind of the evolution of what a band can do, then come out and see this show, because that's going to be exactly what it is. On the music side, now, when we started this tour again, as I think I said before we got on the air, it's like we decided that 2021 was a year where we were just not going to make money playing music and figured let's use our talents for good. You know, kind of like turn the pendulum a little bit. And with that, we decided to kind of help people out. So we did, we looked at the Bijou, we did our Save Our Stages thing at the Bijou and raised some money to keep our friends over there alive. And Gary and team are putting along, doing great right now. And glad to be a part of that. And then,
love the Bijou.
Yeah, it's great. Great, dude. It's a gem. And Gary's a lucky guy. So, you know, with that, then it became the Why Hunger thing. And so Why Hunger through, relationships we've had for years kind of just became a partner of ours. They were looking for fundraisers and they're working with like bands like ours, to help them support, their efforts. So we jumped in and did a fundraiser for them at Garcia's and raised a bunch of money for them and made great friends with their team and Hillary and their team are wonderful. And as we were doing the show, we said, okay, guys, can we get involved? Can we work with you on some capacity for this? And it's Halloween and people are parents and it's tough to get away. And that's the reality of life. Right. So, I was like, well, let's do this. Why don't we do we have a fundraising page on their site. So why don't we do a QR code? Come in, shoot the QR code, donate $5, $10, whatever you can while you're at the show. Instead of a beer, feed somebody, you know, buy somebody a meal, you know?
Tell me more about Why Hunger though. Like what's the mission statement? What's the overall goal there?
Yeah. So Why Hunger started in 1975, Harry Chapin, you know, the folk artist, DJ Bill Ayers, put this thing together basically to stop hunger and poverty. Looked at America as a very wealthy opportunity and had a very solvable problem. So they built this organization, and used artists like Bruce Springsteen and probably everybody you've ever heard of.
Carlos Santana.
Yeah. You know, and then they became like the second, third tier. So we're somewhere in that second, third tier. We became an artist against hunger and poverty with Why Hunger, and they're kicking off their Hungerthon, which is their kind of kickoff of November 1st around Thanksgiving time. And they run it straight through the holidays where it's just a big fundraising effort for them. And we're kind of kicking it off a little early here in Connecticut for them. Cause our date's right before that, but you know, I equate it to the, you know, if you think about the idea of Thanksgiving and giving back and the holidays, I think it's a perfect kind of kickoff for that. And this is a great organization to get a little awareness and support around that are going to help people have good Thanksgivings and holidays.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's really a phenomenal organization run by really great people. And obviously there have been some incredibly successful artists who have given their time and their effort to help solve what is ultimately a very solvable problem. And we, as the richest nation in the world, should be better at this, but we're not. And so that's one of the things that we just want to dedicate our time. And as far as the client's concerned, John, I mean, look, it's the penultimate part of the year for us. This is a gigantic show. We are blessed to be playing what we believe is, if not, you know, the center of the sort of Black Rock area, but also just to be able to grace the stage from the people that came before us. I mean, there have been you know, world famous, world class Hall of Fame artists that have been there. So we are honored to be able to do it. We are super excited. It is a large hall, and for us that's an enormous challenge. But we're taking it on, and hopefully we're going to fill the place. So that's the goal.
And best of all, they have really been accommodating to us. They have bent over backwards. We're super excited about being there and having a booth for Why Hunger and another sponsor, A Case of Water, which we should mention as well. And we've got a great show prepared, right? So the whole thing is lining up quite nice.
So it's on Mischief Night, dude. Are there going to be some shenanigans? Tell me there's going to be shenanigans.
There's always shenanigans.
There's going to be costumes. There's going to be craziness. Guaranteed.
All right. So costumes. I have to ask about the costumes. Like, so are you guys trying to keep it a secret or are there some announcements for costumes? Because I want to.
We're debating that right now. We may come out naked. We don't know. We haven't figured that one out yet.
No, hey, we're not doing that.
The Red Hot Chili Peppers did it.
That's not going to happen. But
yeah, they were in much better shape as we discussed earlier.
You don't want to see this.
All right. So a strong no on nudity from JP. That's fine. What's the debate though? Can we hear what we're trying to decide between?
Well, we're trying to think thematically. Like, we can't all come out and be like a hodgepodge of something, right? So we're trying to think of an overall theme. You know, what's the back line versus the front line?
You know? My vote is Disney princesses.
Oh no,
that's pretty good.
Tutus for everybody.
Yeah, that's Tiaras, the whole thing. But you have to come and see.
That's a good point. That's a good point. You will have to come and see the show for yourselves. On October 30th at the Klein, man. I'm going to be there, guys. I really just can't wait. And I'm glad that we got to sit down and talk about this. It's for a great cause. It's going to be the thing to do on Mischief Night, the night before Halloween in Black Rock. And tickets are still available right now. Yeah. Website, can they get them at your website? Can they get them at the Klein? Where can people buy tickets?
You can get them in all of the above. And we've got a bit.ly that's just Terp Klein, T-E-R-P Klein. That's a direct link to the whole shenanigan.
Yeah, and we're actually heading to Paul's house in like the next half an hour because we have our practice tonight. So it's going to be getting ready for the show.
So if you have any requests, now's the time, John.
Right. I probably built this city on rock and roll. I mean, when it's Halloween, I got to be knee deep in the hoopla.
There you go.
I got to be.
That's awesome.
All right.
Should do it though, really. Come on. Guys, thank you for taking time out of a practice night to sit down and talk with me. New material from Terrapin coming out. Terrapin Live, October 30th at the Klein. And then this Sunday on Fairfield County Live and Local, we're gonna be playing Light of the Moon again. So you can check out some original material from Terrapin. And we'll replay some clips from this conversation because I really just did have so much fun talking music with you guys as I always do.
You're giving tickets out, no?
What's that?
We've got some tickets to give away.
We've got a giveaway in the works. Me and Maria, me and the fabulously talented Maria Schwertl have to figure out the finite details, but I promise that I will give a definitive answer this Sunday at 9 p.m. So, yes, there is also a chance that you could win tickets to this event as well. Possibly this Sunday, possibly all of next week. We're not sure yet. We're going to figure it out. But more on that later. For right now, though, guys, thank you so much for hanging with me tonight. I appreciate it. Stick around for a sec after I end the live feed. But, yeah, for everybody watching at home, Terrapin, check them out at Terrapin Band. Make sure you buy tickets to the show at the Klein. It's going to be a great time. Thanks again for watching Fairfield County Live and Local. See you next week.